You've just tuned into Beyond Your Past, part of the Mental Health News Radio Network. Welcome back to Beyond Your Past, the podcast that focuses on inspiring you to move forward from what's been holding you back in life. Each week, we talk with clinicians, coaches, mental health advocates, and those who've overcome tremendous odds and now use their journey to encourage you throughout yours. I'm Matt Pappas, certified coach and NLP master practitioner, alongside Joanne Suppressi, author, certified coach, and hypnotherapist. In addition to talking with amazing guests on the show, we share practical tips and insightful strategies that empower and encourage you to break free from anxiety, self-doubt, and the negative mindsets that keep you stuck. This is your place to feel validated and encouraged as you take your life back and live free from your past. Greetings, friend, and welcome back to the podcast. Before we get started, we'd like to take a second and thank a couple of incredible organizations. INLP Center, offering world-class online neuro-linguistic programming and life coach training to people in over 70 countries. If you've ever considered becoming a coach or simply want more information on their programs, just head over to inlpcenter.org. And to Daily Recovery Support, interactive daily group calls in a safe atmosphere for survivors of complex trauma, equipping you with the skills and information you can use every single day in your healing journey. Learn more about this affordable resource and get signed up at cptsdfoundation.org. And a special thank you to you. We appreciate you listening to the podcast and making us part of your weekly playlist. You all are the reason we do this show, and we would not be here without you. If you enjoy these podcasts, please consider sharing this episode with one person who might find it helpful and leaving us a review on your favorite podcasting app. That would be awesome. Also, if you'd like to help support this podcast for as little as 99 cents per month, just head over to beyondyourpastradio.com and click on the support link at the top of the page. Your generous support of any amount helps us to continue bringing you new episodes every single week. So today on the podcast, we are talking with Patricia Mosio. Trisha is an outreach specialist and advocates for long-term sobriety by working with mental health and addiction and recovery websites, providing resources to recovering addicts and shedding light on the disease of addiction. Trisha is the mother of two, actively involved in her local recovery community, and is passionate about helping others find hope in seemingly hopeless situations. She's also a survivor of childhood trauma, sharing her story of how many years of struggling with complex PTSD symptoms and the subsequent addictions to drugs and alcohol kept her isolated and stuck until circumstances unfolded that led her to a rock-bottom state in a jail cell, alone and nearly losing her son. It was then that she began to seek help and ultimately turn her life around. So sit back, get comfortable, and join us as Trisha shares her story of childhood trauma, addiction, recovery, advocacy, and hope, starting right now. So hey, Patricia, welcome to Beyond Your Past. It's Matt and Joanne. How are you today?
I'm great, Matt. Thank you so much for having me on. And Joanne, so nice to meet you, unofficially meet you.
It's so nice to meet you too. And we are so glad you are joining us today.
Super grateful to be here. I really love everything that you guys are doing. I'm super passionate about mental health and spreading awareness on mental health. So this is just such an amazing opportunity. And I appreciate you guys having me on.
We are definitely grateful to have you here with us. You and I connected a while back when you submitted a blog post on surviving my past, which I will link in the show notes. And as you mentioned, you are passionate about mental health and sobriety and recovery from trauma. And so why don't we actually get started and kind of allow you to share some of your story as much as you're comfortable with in terms of, you know, the things that you've gone through in life and the way that you've been able to recover and how it's affected you and all that good stuff, and then we'll kind of go from there.
Okay, that sounds great. So I am originally from a small town outside of Atlanta, McDonough, Georgia. I was born and raised kind of in a small town, and I've actually found myself in South Florida, probably one of the busiest cities. I actually came down here for sobriety. I've been down here 4 years. I have been sober for three. I have two beautiful children actively involved in my recovery community, and I also work for a digital marketing company, and we do marketing mostly for treatment centers, detoxes, things like that. The name of the company that I work for is actually Stodzy, And like I said, this job kind of fell in my lap about 2 years into my sobriety, and it's been a blessing. It's giving me opportunities such as this, where I share my story, I spread awareness, and I help sick people find help, you know, which is ultimately the goal.
So now you mentioned that you have experienced some type of trauma. So can you share with our listeners what kind of trauma you have experienced so they understand where you're coming from?
Absolutely. So going back, my first encounter with trauma, I was about 5 years old, and I was actually molested by a family member. It went on for a couple of years, to the best of my recollection. That's the funny thing about trauma. Can't really put the whole puzzle together. So it's like in glimpses almost. The first time that I came out about it was we had a good touch, bad touch seminar at my school. I remember being in first grade. And when they had that good touch, bad touch seminar, instantly it was like this shame and guilt came over me. And I just remember feeling so unworthy, so inadequate, and just so shameful. I went to the school counselors. I made them aware of what had been going on, and they expressed it to my family. Again, with trauma, it's so hard to really piece everything together, because like my body's natural response to something like that is block it out, whether I block it out naturally or, you know, later in my story, you know, I choose other substances to block that out. So as soon as my parents were made aware, I think they did the best they could with what they had, but to be honest, nothing ever came of it. So here I was with this messy, uncomfortable, confusing to, you know, it happened to me when I was about five. So I was eight at the time, confusing to an eight-year-old. Naturally, self-blame tends to creep into these situations. And that was my first experience with trauma. So instantly, the message that was portrayed to me was, you go through something that's difficult, and we don't talk about it. You know, you leave it right where it is. I was around this family member all growing up. In fact, there are family members to this day that I don't even think they're aware of the trauma that happened and what happened. And it's just been something that has never been spoken about. So that was kind of my first experience with trauma. I would say probably prior to that as well, my biological mother was an alcoholic. She was not really involved in my life at all. You know, some would tend to connect that to trauma as well. I did definitely dealt with a lot of abandonment, rejection issues prior to my first encounter with the sexual trauma. And that was really tough too. Again, that was something that was never talked about. My mom wasn't in my life. My dad never really spoke about why she wasn't in my life. It was just, she had her own life with my two sisters, and I was living with my stepmother who adopted me and my father. So again, another situation where something happened, I didn't understand, and you just didn't talk about it. I come from an Italian background, so that kind of comes with the culture as well. What happens in the house stays in the house, kind of. I guess I would say that was kind of the vibe growing up. So instantly that kind of became the way that I coped with life. And as my life continued, if I encountered anything that would be uncomfortable or anything that would be outside of, you know, the normal situation, it became first instinct for me to just not talk about those things. My experience was I went to the people that I loved and trusted, and nothing came of it. So I really just kind of internalized all of those things. Didn't talk about them. Definitely had feelings now that I'm aware of that were directly associated with that event. But at the time, I just thought, you know, I had low self-esteem. I was consistently comparing myself to be less than or better than in any situation that I encountered. I definitely had major trust issues. Fast forward, my stepmother adopted me, and I grew up with her and my father in the house. And then they had my brother. And so they had one child together, and then it was me. I was adopted by my stepmom. Growing up with her was difficult as well. Again, you know, looking back and now being a sober woman, I can say that I believe everyone did the best they could with what they had. But with my stepmother, it was very unpredictable. Some days I would come home and she would be in a great mood, and other days, not such a great mood. Our relationship was very tumultuous. She had a good relationship with my brother, but I also remember that there were a lot of times that there was definitely favoritism towards him, and a lot of lashing out at me. So again, as a young girl, my biological mother wasn't in the picture. Then I got this stepmother and our relationship was not so great. That rejection again crept up. I went away to college about 3 years away, 3 years, about 3 hours away from my hometown. And that was my first experience really with alcohol prior to leaving there, was my junior prom. And I remember the first time that I ever tried alcohol was actually with some friends. We were came home from junior prom, and I remember it was Mr. Boston's vodka and cranberry juice. And my very first thought before we even picked up a drink was, I want to get wasted. I want to drown out anything and everything. And I just wanted to have the desired effect, which was oblivion. And that's what I did. Essentially, we all drank. Of course, we all wanted to kind of get drunk. But I remember my friends getting drunk. And I remember I got drunk. Everyone threw up, went to sleep. I remember I got sick and I kept drinking. And I didn't understand why no one else was staying awake to drink with me. So that was my first encounter with alcohol. And then, like I said, I left for college, chased my first love to Savannah, Georgia, which is about 3 hours away. And I experienced a breakup. And it was really, for me, it was kind of a relief because I finally felt like I could really be on my own. So I moved to a town about an hour away from my school. And it was known as a party school for sure. And when it came time to choose between going to the bars or, you know, knowing going home, going to bed early so that I could be up for class at 8 a.m., it was like there was no option at that point. It was like, I'm going to go out and I'm going to get wasted. So, you know, I was doing a lot of the things that the people around me were doing, but the difference is they would get up and live their lives. So they would get up, maybe go to the bar, go home at 11 o'clock, wake up and go to class the next day. So that ultimately resulted in me flunking out of school. I moved back home at this point, and I was home for probably about a year when I got pregnant with my son. And it was the first time that I feel like I had any major consequences. And I don't say consequences of my son as, you know, a negative consequence, but it was a consequence of my drinking and my reckless behavior. I had my son at 19 years old, and I was in no way, shape, or form prepared or ready to have a child. I was not in school. My parents owned a small business, and I started running that with my stepmother, which, of course, just complicates things. You know, working with family, living with family, having a child in your family's house, it was a lot. And, you know, I did okay. I would say at that point, I hadn't really crossed over the threshold of what I know to be now my full-blown alcoholism. I remember my stepmom would watch my son once a week so I could have time with my friends. But I can tell you that I do remember that I would obsess about when that day was coming all week long. So I would go to work, you know, I'd work at the restaurant, I'd come home to my son, but I was still always thinking about cannot wait to get to the one day that I had to myself. And I knew I was going to drink and I knew I was going to go out with my friends. When my son was about 3 years old, my stepmother was home alone with him, and she had a massive heart attack. And I remember being away at church, actually, when this happened. And I got a call, and I didn't answer. I was in church, so I got a call. And finally, it was probably about 3 or 4 missed calls, and then I received a text message from a neighbor that said, hey, I saw the ambulance at your house. Is everything okay? And even at this point, I didn't really connect the dots. I still was thinking maybe Liam fell and got hurt. So I called my brother. And as soon as he answered the phone, just hearing the sheer terror in his voice, he said, something's wrong with mom. The ambulance is here. You've got to get here. Rushed straight home from church and went straight to the hospital. And that's when I was made aware that my mom had had a massive heart attack and they were putting her in a hypothermic coma. So in order to let her body rest and see how much damage was done, because at this point we didn't really know how long my son had been with her while she had the heart attack and had lack of oxygen to her brain. And my very first thought was, I have got to take something in order to show up and be here for my dad, for my brother, and for my son. So my first thought was, I'm going to call a drug dealer. I'm going to get some sort of medication And that's the way I'm going to show up here because I can't deal with what's going on. And prior to this, a few years prior to that, I had suffered from a chronic kidney disease. So I was prescribed Percocet for a few years, never abused them, kind of took them as prescribed. But that night, my first thought was, I've got to call someone and get Percocet. It was an opiate. That was the first thing I thought. And that was really when my addiction took off. My mom was in a coma for 3 days, and then she passed away. But throughout that entire time, I was medicated. I don't think I made it an hour without continuing to self-medicate. And after she passed, that was really when I felt like the rug had been ripped out from underneath me. So I dealt with this abandonment. I dealt with this rejection. And now she was gone. So all of that, like trying to get this love and fulfillment and adequacy from my stepmother, that was now taken away and completely unresolved. And here I was as the only woman in the house. My father's grieving, my brother's grieving, my son has just experienced major trauma as a toddler. And I was completely ill-equipped to deal with what was set before me. And, you know, prior to experiencing sobriety and the freedom that I have today, you know, my story would always entail, you know, if you had been through that, of course, you know, you would use too. But looking back at that now, it just shows the insidious nature of this disease because, and, you know, faced with the opportunity to show up for my family and to be there and to help take care of the restaurant and to be there for my grieving father and to be there for my son who had just experienced trauma, you know, one would think that I would want to be as sober-minded as possible and as emotionally available. But my brain instantly told me, no way you can deal with this and show up for them unless you're medicated. There's no way. So that was my first instinct, and that's really when things took off for me. Going forward, I was running the restaurant by myself at this point, also working another job, taking care of my son, and my father got a job promotion in Texas, so he was away working, and my brother went off to school, so it was just my son and I in the house. And being in the house when my mother passed away, that was super hard for me. And I just did not want to, I just didn't want to feel anything. I didn't know how to cope with anything. I didn't know how to feel anything. I just knew that oblivion was my only way out. So at that point, I really started to indulge in any and all substances. I got into a super abusive relationship, started dabbling with methamphetamine, and that drug really brought me to my knees. You know, a lot of addicts and alcoholics, they reach a point where they say, oh yeah, I'm doing this, but I'd never go there or I'd never do that. And I did all of those things that I said I would never do. So I started to dabble with methamphetamines, and that's really when I started to hit my bottom. I, you know, on the outside, I felt like everything looked okay. I was showing up for work. I was taking care of my son. I say taking care of my son. He was fed and clothed and he was making it to school. But I really was so emotionally checked out and so emotionally unavailable. And, you know, if I'm being completely honest, there were times when I was definitely negligent, you know. Finally, Child Protective Services got involved. And that's when I started to really experience the true nature of addiction. So Child Protective Services got involved. Again, this was definitely a traumatic time in my life. We say trauma, you know, trauma affects different people in different ways. But having these people come into my life, you know, and threatening losing the one person in my life that I always felt like loved me unconditionally, that was definitely a traumatic time for me. But even faced with those consequences and faced with the reality of what me continuing to use and continuing to give in to these demons, per se, that were in my head, the consequences of that was I was going to lose my son. And I can vividly remember sitting outside of their office, going in for a hair follicle test, completely convinced that I was going to pass as I'm getting high sitting in the parking lot, as I'm self-medicating sitting in the parking lot of Child Protective Services. And that was the insanity. That was the place that my disease takes me, is that I am thoroughly convinced that everything's going to be fine. And I'm thoroughly convinced because I'm completely delusional. I'm absent-minded. I'm completely I had one master at that time, and that master was opiates. You know, that was it. That's what my life revolved around. And again, you could have put me on a lie detector test and asked me if I wanted custody of my son and asked me if I wanted to quit using drugs and alcohol. And I would have told you yes, and I would have passed. But the reality is I had no resources to do so. I was completely ignorant as to what I was really up against. And it wasn't long before I faced legal consequences. So CPS is involved and I'm at risk of losing my son. I remember the chaos that my family was experiencing at that time and just the powerlessness that my father must have felt. And I finally got arrested. Again, another super traumatic experience for me. I was in jail for 3 days and two nights, and I would say that was pretty traumatic for me. You know, I grew up in a blue-collar home, definitely had experienced trauma, but, you know, within my upbringing, I was never exposed to any alcoholism or addictive behaviors or any type of, you know, of the legal system or any of those things. And here I was sitting in jail, detoxing on a cold jail cell floor. And that was truly where I hit my bottom, where it was just like, I do not belong here. Like, where has my life really taken me? I got out of jail and I will never forget the day the CPS workers that had been super involved in my case. I think at this point they finally realized she definitely has a problem. She loves her son, but she's sick. And thank God for those women. They came and met me at my house and said, you know what, you voluntarily check yourself into treatment and you get help and we will close this case. We'll let your son go with your father for a year and we'll close this case. And I was so broken at this point. It was just like, there was no other choice for me. That's where I was going. So I hopped on a plane and headed for South Florida. And that's kind of where we are today. Went into treatment, a 33-day dual diagnosis treatment center, which was the best decision I ever made. And then that's kind of how I landed in South Florida.
Well, you stated that this was your first podcast, but I'm very impressed. So you're very good at telling your story.
Yeah, me too. That was incredible.
You are very good at telling your story. And I thank you so much for telling it with us and, you know, being word of first podcast. We are very honored. So there is so much to talk about, obviously. You have layers and layers of experiences that we can dive into. But I wanted to go back to the beginning real quick. And I was really impressed when you were a child and you spoke up about the abuse after learning about good touch and bad touch. It's very hard for children to do that. They usually are afraid to, but you were brave enough to do that. But it was disappointing to know what happened afterwards. So I can only imagine the confusion and disappointment and can see how that has affected you throughout your life. You know, so people listening, I'd recommend that, you know, when stuff like this is brought to your attention, you take it seriously and take some action because it does have a great impact on the child's life for the rest of their life. So it's understandable why you were so silent for so many years. And, you know, I was curious to know, when did you finally speak up about your experiences and the trauma and, you know, talk about these situations that you really did need to share with others?
So, yeah, to be honest, I held on to that after that last day in the counselor's office. That was the last time I had spoken about it for 20 years until I came to treatment in South Florida. So for 20 years, I didn't talk about it. I didn't share it with anyone. It was just this gut-wrenching, awful thing that followed me around everywhere. I came to treatment here, and when I came here, I'd already detoxed at home, so I didn't go through detox in South Florida. So I kind of came in on a pink cloud, and the treatment center that I went to, that was not an option. I was not going to come in and just kind of skate by, you know, and go to treatment and just, this is just about alcoholism or this is just about addiction. No, like it's a soul problem. You know, it's within me. It's within my thinking. It's within my behaviors. It's within the way that I deal with situations. It covers every facet of my life. Like alcohol and drugs became a solution for me for a long time until they weren't a solution anymore. So when I came here, I was with a therapist and I remember I'd kind of been on this pink cloud, kind of just, you know, giving I was smart enough to give just enough details that I didn't really have to get into anything, but it seemed like I was kind of sharing about things. And I remember I was on a one-on-one session with her when she confronted me and she said, "What's really going on in your life? You're not here because you just have a problem with drugs and alcohol. Like, it's clear that through your story and through your experiences and these reoccurring situations that you found yourself in, that you've dealt with some sort of trauma." And I just remember breaking down, and I shared my experience with her, at which point she was immediately able to identify kind of what you had just mentioned, that this was something that was never addressed. I was never validated, and it was never my fault. And that was the first time that anyone had ever said that to me. And I remember she called my father and we had a really great conversation. He kind of cleared the air on maybe how he could have handled it differently, or, you know, maybe how it's conveyed to him differently, and that's why he didn't handle it in a certain way. But just that open line of communication and that secret coming out really revolutionized my experience overall, you know, and also helped me to see the family member when it happened was also young, and it clearly had happened to this individual as well. So it was healing in such a way for me to see a different perspective, as well as to also hear from my father and to hear him say, "I acknowledge that this happened to you, and I'm sorry that I didn't protect you from that." And that was really the first time that I'd ever experienced that.
Something else that you mentioned, and actually kind of along the lines of this, of when you first ended up telling someone and then nothing was ever done about it. So you kind of came to terms with the thought process of, well, this is something that I can tell somebody, but then we don't ever mention it again. And so you kind of live in that mindset for years and years and years until you get to a point where you're able to, you know, as you mentioned, talk to a counselor and go to a treatment center. I'm curious, how difficult was it for you to open up once you felt, or I guess maybe two, how difficult was it to feel safe enough to open up and start talking about and kind of change that mindset that you had lived with for so long, obviously through no fault of your own, that this was something we don't talk about, when in reality we know that you have to talk about it to heal. So is it something now today that you still struggle with sharing maybe every now and then? And how difficult was it to open up to your counselors and therapists and kind of change that mindset?
It's a really good point that you bring up, Matt. To be honest, it was very difficult for me, especially with women. And I had a female therapist, so it was very difficult. I didn't trust any women. I felt like they're all going to hurt me in some way, but it was also the validation that I wanted so badly. It was like any woman I would encounter, I just wanted them to love me, because I didn't get a chance to really experience that. And not to take away from my stepmother, because again, she was super supportive in a lot of ways and always made sure that we had what we needed. But not having that like mother-daughter, like really close-knit relationship affected me. And then also to experience this type of trauma and come in and ask to open up to other women was very difficult for me. You know, at first it was very hard. And to be honest, even throughout the first couple of years, my sobriety was very, very difficult. The fellowship that I'm a part of it's a 12-step fellowship and requires, you know, an intimate exchange of, here are all the things that I've been through in my life, you know, and here's my part in all of these things, you know, not to say in an abusive situation, my part, but what was my part? I didn't share these things. I didn't come out about these things. And so there's a lot of healing that's found in that process, in a 12-step process. But it was once I started to really get acclimated within the fellowship that I'm a part of and started to have real friends in my life and real women in my life that were invested in me and wanted to see me succeed, and that there wasn't that feeling of competition or comparison, but it was truly a reciprocal relationship. And furthermore, you know, early into my sobriety, once we get sober, it's not like these behaviors just dissipate and they just go away. So the first couple of years of my sobriety were very difficult. I found myself in a toxic, abusive relationship. I was acting out on a lot of the same behaviors. I still wasn't trusting women at first. And it's been about 9 or 10 months. I finally reached a place where I said, you know what? I've got to seek out some trauma therapy. These things are affecting my life still. So I've taken away the drugs and alcohol, which seemed to have been my problem. You know, that's typically how the alcoholic thinks. This seems to be my problem. I've removed this problem, But yeah, I'm still feeling the same way. So I remember being completely sober and absolutely miserable. I was seeing my life look the same way that it did in active addiction, before active addiction, you know, all the same behaviors I displayed my whole life, you know, super codependent, looking for validation from other people, not trusting anyone, but truly wanting to trust other people. And it finally got to a point where I decided to throw myself into trauma therapy. And I'll be honest with you, that has been the best decision that I've ever made. And it's a female therapist. I found a female therapist that works in the office that I work in. And it was the first day I remember sitting down with her. And I remember her telling me, no matter what, I just want you to know that I've got you, that I'm here for you. I want to see you succeed, and you are beautiful, and you are worthy of love, and you are worthy of success, and you are worthy of happiness. And I know that I can say that all day, and until you believe that, you know, it's not going to change, but I just want you to know that I'm in your corner and I'm here for you. And something in that moment, I just trusted her, and my life just completely changed. I started to divulge all of these painful memories, and she really helped me in this process to identify where some of my behaviors were really a symptom of PTSD. And I had really attributed a lot of my behaviors to, like, you're just an unhealthy person, and kind of really turned that into, like, self-shaming. Like, you're reckless, you act erratically, you're super codependent. And she really helped me to see that as a result of my trauma, I had a lot of PTSD, and it had really developed into complex PTSD. So here I was seeking out these same types of situations. And much like my addiction, I had no idea why. I had no idea why I was still seeking out toxic relationships and still looking for validation from people that were emotionally unavailable to give it to me. And through therapy and through talking about these things and being educated on trauma and PTSD and complex PTSD and how that manifests in someone's life, that's really where I feel like the change for me has happened throughout my process to getting sober and just kind of finding healing through these things.
Well, I am extremely proud of you for how far you've came. And, you know, having the trouble talking and opening up to women is totally understandable. And now here you are. And you mentioned something about putting on that fake happy face, you know, even though you didn't feel that way. So how does it feel now that you could actually put on a real happy face?
Absolutely. So I have been sober 3 years now. June 29th, 2016 is my sobriety date. And to be honest, it's been a process. So I think a lot of people assume, you know, you get sober, everything's great, you know, and that wasn't my experience. My experience was very painful. I'm very stubborn. Again, I didn't really trust many people, and I had always lived with this facade. So I'll let you get close enough, but not too close. You know, that was kind of always my method. And yet inside of me, I just wanted to be so close to other people. I wanted to have those intimate relationships, but the thought of intimacy, even today, sometimes makes me cringe. You know, it really does. It is something that I've definitely struggled with. But I found that the more that I have become the most authentic version of myself that stands up and says, hey, you know what? Today, I'm having a really crappy day. I've made horrible decisions today. I've hurt other people. I've been impatient with my kids. I was really selfish today. I was dishonest in this area. When I take a look at these things, and I can talk about them openly, you know, with another alcoholic or with some of the women that are in my support group, it really has completely changed my relationships with other people just in general, as well as like my overall feeling of like, this is who I'm meant to be. I've never really been able, I feel like, to be myself or to even understand or know who I really am. Like, who is Trisha today? And the more that I look within myself and the more that I, what we call like inventory these things, and I take a look at these things that are bothering me and I identify how I'm feeling or maybe why I acted out in a certain situation, what did it remind me of? What did it bring up for me? When I take the time to do those things and I have an understanding, then there comes a sense of awareness and then change is implemented. So the more that I've like gone throughout this process, the happier that I've become. I have two beautiful kids. I work a job that I never thought I would ever be a part of. I've always been super passionate about writing and you know, I think in the American concept of working, you go and work a job you hate just so you can pay the bills. And that hasn't been my experience now 3 years sober. I work a job that I love that truly doesn't feel like work. I don't dread walking into the office every day. What I do every day makes a difference, or I like to think it makes a difference, you know, in the lives of other people. And I'm surrounded by women that I genuinely care about and that I have intimate relationships with, that I can honestly say that today I don't carry around these secrets. I mean, I have a sponsor that I speak with regularly, and she knows everything pretty much that goes on in my life. You know, it really has been liberating, to say the least. And the more that I talk about these things on a podcast like this, the more that I've written about them, that's kind of how my process started. So I got this job and I would write about these things. And I remember a friend asked me, how do you share all of these like intimate things? How did you share about the sexual abuse? How did you talk about the abuse with your, you know, with people that you've been in a relationship with? How did you talk about your relationship with your mom and she's not here anymore? How did you find the courage to talk about these things? And, you know, my response to him was, how could I not talk about those things? I came from such a dark and ugly and lonely and just depraved life into the life that I live today, where I'm kind of an open book, you know? And I feel like if my experience can help one other person breathe a little easier, then it's completely worth it to me. And I just feel so fulfilled and just so grateful for the opportunities that I've come across. And, you know, honestly, even for the suffering and the struggles that I've endured, you know, at the time, I'm not always so happy about them. But looking back now, I see that like every single experience that I've gone through, where it has been used in turn to help someone else, which is just a miracle to me, especially within, you know, the fellowship, like within the fellowship, 12-step fellowship from alcoholism. It's such a beautiful thing. And it's almost like a secret society of these people that really are looked at as like the world's throwaways. I would say 80% of us come from mental health disorders and abuse and trauma and kind of like society's throwaways. Oh, you know, look at this mother who couldn't stay sober. She almost lost her kid to Child Protective Services. And we come together with this common pain and suffering and find a common solution. And some of the most loving, genuine, sincere, and compassionate people I've ever met in my life. And I don't know that I've ever felt more at home or at peace than I do today. It's just been an unbelievable experience.
Everything that you've shared today has just been incredible. And I know Joanne and I both have so many other questions and we are running out of time. So I think, since we had the honor of being your first podcast, we definitely want to bring you back again because there's so many things we can dive into in more detail. So before I ask this last question, though, I just want to say thank you so much for sharing everything. Your story is amazing. Your resilience and your dedication to continuing to heal is just, it's inspiring. And that's what this podcast is all about. So thank you for that, first and foremost.
Thank you so much. Thank you guys so much.
Absolutely. And so before we go, though, do you have anything you can share in terms of somebody who is maybe at the breaking point where you were, somebody who's struggling with some type of addiction, somebody who's struggling with opening up and talking to somebody, anything else that you can wrap up to share with them to just maybe encourage them to go ahead and seek out that help to not be ashamed and to reach out for the support that's out there so they can begin to heal as well?
Absolutely. If I could give any suggestion, you're not alone. That's definitely the first thing that I would say. I know that, you know, in the pit and, you know, the bottomless pit that I felt like I was in, I truly felt like I was alone and no one else understood where I was. But there are a lot of people just like you. And no matter where you come from or what your past looks like, there is a solution and it's never going to be found at the bottom of a pill bottle or a bottle of alcohol. There's nothing that's ever going to fill that, but I would definitely recommend you get plugged into a 12-step fellowship, ask for help, seek out treatment. And if you make it to treatment, soak up everything they have to offer, open up in therapy, be open with anyone that you encounter, and just get connected with sober people and just see their lives, see the way that they walk. You know, don't listen to what they have to say, but watch where their feet walk. And you can just see that there's so much hope and there's so many promises that come with living a sober, you know, healing lifestyle that's found in sobriety.
Incredible. Thank you so much, Patricia. This has been amazing. Where can everybody find you online if they want to connect with you or check out some of your writing or anything like that?
Yeah, so my Facebook is just under my name, Tricia Mocio, T-R-I-C-I-A, and then M-O-C-E-O. On Instagram, it's at T-R-I-C-L-O-V-E-E. And my writing is kind of all over. I've come to notice you can just Google my name, and gratefully, not like, you know, when you used to Google my name in the past, what would come up. It's a lot of my writing that comes up today on mental health, addiction, any of those things. I don't have a website yet, but like I said, my work is kind of all over the internet.
Excellent. Thanks again, Patricia. We will link the post that you wrote for Surviving My Past in the show notes and encourage everybody to just Google your name and check out all the amazing work you're doing. So thanks again for joining us. This has been amazing.
Yeah, thank you, Patricia. It was a pleasure having you. And thank you so much for opening up with us. And we look forward to having you on again someday.
I would absolutely love to come back. Thank you guys so much.
Thanks for listening to Beyond Your Past, part of the Mental Health News Radio Network. Information shared on this podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should supersede the direction of a medical doctor or any mental health professional. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe on your favorite podcasting app and leave us a review. We would sure appreciate it. Also, please consider sharing this episode with someone who may find it helpful. If you would like more information on working with Matt as your coach, just head over to beyondyourpast.com and schedule your free one-hour chat. If you'd like to learn more about working with Joanne as your coach, please check out joannesuppressi.com and contact her for more information. We're always on the lookout for new guests. If you're interested in joining us on an upcoming episode, just head over to beyondyourpastradio.com and contact us. We'd love to hear from you. Talk to you soon.